webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 16th of January, 2014. Coming right to you from the Gospel Revolution Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. And here from heaven in Texas, please welcome the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
Heaven indeed.
When we all get to Houston.
Right. Wonderful Houston, Texas.
So you're well down there, sun shining, mate, sun shining here in Tennessee. We are having a great day. This week we heard from Al Vitale, Bob Jones, James Forehand, and all of those new friends of ours in Dallas, Texas, who helped develop Mike's next teaching series we're delivering in Calgary, Alberta, later this month. Today we're visiting the subject of ultimate reconciliation and one of the many forms of ultimate reconciliation called praetorism or preterism. What exactly is ultimate reconciliation? Is the devil going to be redeemed? Is your dog going to go to heaven? Stay with us as we cover these and other topics today. Mike, this week I read a fantastic article, and it came from the Uniting Methodist Church. They're a nice bunch, and I do know, because I was married to Laura in the Uniting Methodist Church, I do know this about them. They sure have great potlucks. I'm telling you, those old girls, they can cook like there's no tomorrow. And here's what they said. They said, the whole church needs to be inclusive. And the lady who writes this, she says, my fear is that the division in the United Methodist Church will become one more reason for some in our culture to dismiss all religious institutions as reactionary, irrelevant, or narrow-minded. The congregation I serve here in Arlington is a reconciling congregation, an identity it has claimed since congregational consensus was reached in 2006. A reconciling congregation, that would be, that's a novel thought, isn't it?
That, yeah, it sounds very nice, but only since 2006, right?
You're cruel. Hey, listen, better late than never, mate. Come on. You heard about the bishop. I think he was a bishop who was recently defrocked for officiating at his own gay son's marriage. And I think this is a bit of a reaction to that from some within the Uniting Methodist culture.
I see. I didn't know that.
Well, it's nice to think that the word inclusive and the word Christianity might be used in the same sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've got nothing to say about that. Yeah.
Well, of course, that brings up the gay issue, of course, which I actually... do want to say something about it. You know, this I realize that it is a subject that people who are very much entrenched in legalistic Christianity just are closed-minded about altogether. But I watched an interview last night with a gentleman who wrote a book, and he went to Nigeria and did his research with the groups who promoted passing a law in Nigeria that made homosexuality illegal and imprisonable and even a death penalty in certain situations.
Is Nigeria a Muslim country or Christian country or nothing country?
No, it's kind of like Kenya. It's Christian. There's a lot of Christians in Nigeria, you know, of course, with all the Christian missionaries going into the but it's not just Nigeria now. This is spreading around to other countries where they're making these extreme laws of imprisonment for visiting a gay bar, 17 years in prison, congregating, meeting another gay person. All the way to death itself. But in this interview that I saw, this gentleman wrote the book, and he did write it by going there and meeting with the Christian missionaries on the ground there and the leaders of this organization. But his entire book is revealing how that since Christianity has failed in America at the agenda against the homosexual community and gay community in this country, that they moved their entire forces into Africa, and that it is the Christian right in Nigeria that has pushed this issue of passing these laws against homosexuality.
You remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about a Turkish city who had passed a law that they would not be able to celebrate any Christmas there because they were their children had been born and raised to administer justice in the world, not to be happy with a fake Santa.
Yeah,
I mean, you might be religious if you think that you must enforce doing good and that doing good can't come from people naturally. You might just be religious, mightn't you?
Exactly. And then defining, good yourself based on morality, especially the way that they are here. And it's, you know, it's difficult for me to not speak up about it when laws are being passed in situations like this. I wouldn't care if it's the gay community or the Mormon community. When they start passing laws to where that somebody can be killed because of simply who they are.
Or what they are. I mean, it happened with black people here in America.
Exactly. And the silent voice is a very loud voice in these situations. When Christians have gone into African countries and propagated the execution of gay people, and citing the Bible and God as the reason for their influencing the government to do these things. I knew that the evangelical right Christian community were endorsing what was happening in Nigeria and now other countries in Africa as a good thing. I didn't know they were there actually propagating it.
When Muslims kill Christians in Africa, they're bad, 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 bad.
Oh, I know.
But when Christians incite the state to kill anyone else, they're good, good, good.
Yes, exactly. And this is the thing that this young man dealt with, who was a Christian guy, and couldn't, you know, hardly believe what he knew was happening there, and went there to do these interviews and to write this book. You certainly can't enforce morality. I mean, it's regardless of what you think it is, it's not something that you can enforce on people for sure. But to the point of where that you would sanction the murder of someone because of who or what they are. Is just amazing, especially like you said, since you know there are countries in this world where that if you're a Christian, you could be killed, and then Christians go into another country and create laws to where that other people can be killed if they happen to disagree with the Christians.
Really, Mr. Christian, you haven't screwed America up badly enough. Now you've got to start on someone else.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Exactly. And it's because of the failure. According to this guy's book, it's because they have accepted the failure of Christianity to maintain and enforce and increase laws against the gay population in this country, that they went to Africa to put all their efforts there.
And you know what, Mike? The laughable, the amusing thing about all this is all of the letters that we're going to get in by Christians saying, but that's not us. No, no, we're not. That was another denomination.
Yeah.
It's always the same. They always say the same thing, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think they'd probably be surprised to find out that it probably is their denomination there that's doing this, because this is a coalition of a group of Christians from different denominations that are there doing this. It was interesting that the guy who did the book, he showed the clip of this. You know, the woman looked like she was from, Dearborn, Michigan, a white lady with her hair cropped really nicely. And
explain Dearborn, Michigan for our listeners, mate.
How do you explain Dearborn, Michigan?
With a lot of adjectives, I'm going to say. Okay, Dearborn, Michigan, by some people, is considered to be the Islamic center of the U.S. Would that be a fair comment?
Oh, I didn't know that, no.
Oh, okay, you're going somewhere else. Oops.
Oh, no, I was going for the commonality of the Midwest. Really.
Oh, go to Bend, Oregon, or go to Indiana somewhere. Indiana's a good place to go to.
Okay. This woman would look like she's from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Corn paddock, Indiana.
There you go. Now, and I have to say, you know, as I was watching her, the question came to my mind, just based on her demeanor as to, why she was fighting so much against this. But the writer of this book said that she had problems with her own sexuality. At the end of the interview, it wasn't me that said that. I would suspect that might be the case, but they showed the clips of her saying that the laws have been changed. Nigeria is against homosexuality because God is against homosexuality, and it is a crime in Nigeria because it's a crime in God's eyes. And he showed that it was these Christian missionaries that were there who were making sure that these laws were pressed through in not just Nigeria, but now it's spreading to other African nations.
Now, these Christians who are pressing for the death penalty for people who perform homosexual acts or have any contact with homosexuals, they would also, I imagine that the only place that they can base that on is the Old Testament.
Yes.
How very bloody selective.
Has to be selective.
I wonder if any of them are like 100 pounds overweight. I wonder what they do with gluttony.
Or sewing two different kinds of cloth together. I mean, you know, goodness gracious. The law is so completely thorough. You know, how many of them that the gluttony, or even if they're absolutely fit, how many of them are eating pig? You know, how many of them are eating bacon? Point is well taken that, it's very selective when you go to these things and begin to condemn people. I find that Christianity has exposed itself for what it really is, and that is an extension of the ability to judge other people.
The emperor has no clothes.
Exactly. And even as this guy pointed out, you know, the very lady there in Nigeria, at least the one he was interviewing, who was a part of or head of this organization, who was here, Americans are in Christian missionaries are promoting that these laws be changed. We're supposed to be the ones who are the standard bearers for freedom. So if you can't persecute the minorities by living here, Christians go to other countries so that they can persecute the minorities that live there.
Well, it was never any different when the Catholics went to South America under the leadership of Cortez.
That's true.
How many native population people died, not just died, died, you know, torturous deaths?
Exactly. And, it, you know, this brings me really to our point about our investment into Africa.
Used to think everybody wanted something until you got yourself stranded all alone. Playing hopeless, thinking that there's no one. And then a stranger comes and gets you on the road.
Africa is increasingly becoming the flashpoint of this battle for the hearts and minds and soul of this world. I mean, when you have Christianity, because of its setbacks in the gay rights movement in America, they all pack up and go to Nigeria and put their funds and their efforts and their blood, sweat, and tears into passing laws against homosexuality there. And you also now have Africa, especially Kenya. There's so many of the places where the terrorist organizations, which were in the Middle East, have now moved into Africa. And you also have Moses Gata there and Elizabeth and a radio station that is willing to put us on the air. We have a School of Scriptures there. Some vitally important things are going on there. And to have the voice of the gospel in that mix, I think it's just imperative, Barris. I think it's just absolutely imperative.
I'm going to be really blunt, and that's not like me, as you know, Michael.
Well, let's brace ourselves for a first time.
It costs us less to put the gospel on the air in native languages and in English. Over five countries in Africa, it costs less than it costs all of the people listening to this show to buy toilet paper for a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
That is, I guess we'll use that as a segue.
Into what?
Well, we want to invite you to be part of what we want to do. It is so...
Oh, good. I'm glad you didn't go with toilet paper.
Well, I said what we do. You know, I'm not out of that one yet, so just wait and see where it goes. Okay, a billion people in Africa. And I'm going to keep talking about this every single pledge drive because I can't get over the fact that a billion people in Africa, and remarkably, Mike has made it his life goal before he slips off the planet and doesn't come home for soup one night. He's made it his life goal to reach 1 billion people with this gospel of grace and peace. In five countries surrounding and including Kenya, this gospel is going out this week. Thank you to a gentleman in Nairobi who gave the money. Not a gentleman in America, not a gentleman in England, a gentleman in Kenya who wants this gospel to go out. What can we do to get behind him? What can we do to encourage him that we are with him, that we are behind him, that we want this more than we want anything else, to get this gospel of grace and peace out in a country of over a billion people and with links back to European countries in languages far beyond anything you can guess at. Don't forget, China has such an investment, such a standing in Africa right now, building infrastructure, roads. Of course, it's after oil, but the fact of the matter is, it takes a language back to China. Mm-hmm. There's another billion people for you.
And Japan, which has a strong population in Kenya, I know. I'm not sure about the other parts. But, you know, this... It just seems, you know, when you look at the history of this, not only did we as Europeans go there and take people out of Africa and enslave them, we went to their countries and enslaved them there. That's the reason there's that each of these countries had a term British or whatever country before them.
Portuguese, French, Italian, German. Yeah. There was not one major European power that did not have a foothold in Africa, did not go in. And, of course, they did the same as we did here. They just came into the country and said, what do you mean you own it? Of course you don't. We own it now.
Yes. It's kind of ironic. I suppose things do kind of go full circle here. But here we are back in Africa and with the voice of the gospel having a potential that it has a potential there greater than any point on the face of the earth right now.
Yep.
That I know of, as and it has all of the manpower needed to and the persuasion and the heart to help get this on. As you can see, I mean, here is a guy who lives in Nairobi who contributed the amount to keep us on for 2 weeks, which that last program was on this past Monday, I believe, this past Tuesday, because we're on there on Monday and on Tuesday when we are on the air.
So now we're back to a gap.
Yes, and now it's off again. And out of that, we've heard from Moses that seven very influential pastors from that listening audience has made contact with him. They've gotten more materials, and that's just the pastors. Now, we have this very odd thing happening, and it has happened ever since this gospel revolution began, and that is it seems that of the groups of people, if you broke everybody down into different groups, the group that we have the greatest success with and the most powerful impact on is pastors. There were three pastors in Dallas this past week that I know of for sure, maybe more, and a lot of people in different levels of ministry that were in attendance. I think most pastors go into this with an earnest heart of really wanting to help people. The influence that this has in Kenya with just this 2 weeks of radio shows with this investment by this gentleman in Nairobi, and I think, Bears, do you have his name? I'd like for people to know who this is.
You bet. That gentleman was Mr. Justin Kiprotich.
This gentleman is the one who reached into his pocket and saw this as so vitally important that he put his own funds into it. Well, the response just 2 weeks. Oh my gosh! If we could be on the air there all of the time, we don't have to even have it as long periods of time. If we could just be consistent with having a show on even 15 minutes a day, we can cut the cost. The radio station is willing to work with us all the way down to 5 minutes a day if that's all we can afford. But we've got to get it in the budget to where that we can at least get these things done.
And this is not, look, this is not going to increase our contributions. You need to know this, family. We're talking about Kenya. We're talking about Africa here. And this is not, we're not pushing this so that we can get better income. We're pushing this for only one reason. We can get better outgo. Christianity is pumping hundreds of millions of dollars into Africa right now, and the lobbying effects are already showing with let's kill gay people because it's against Christianity. When Christian pastors stand up and say to their African constituents, see, we've got this money because God is on our side, and then we can't keep the gospel on more than 2 weeks in a row, guess what the normal native inhabitant of Africa would think? What would you think?
Mm-hmm.
So what we're asking you to do is we're asking you to join with us and just put your hand in your pocket and let's keep this gospel on the air in Africa where it's probably got the best potential of anywhere.
Yeah, and you know, the just like with the Justin contributing these funds, see, these funds didn't come anywhere near Mike Williams Ministries. These
didn't
funds,
touch us. Did what? Tell us no. Why. Tell us why they didn't come across the ocean to us and then back again.
Because we don't have anything set up to where that even needs to happen. I mean, if anything, we send our funds there, And we allow Moses, who has proven himself to use not only our the funds that we send, I have sent him funds for his own personal needs. He has taken those funds and applied them to a radio show or something. It's like, Moses, you need these funds for yourself personally. And
but what I meant, Mike, was if that gentleman had sent the money to us and then we'd sent it to the radio station, there'd have been double loss in all kinds of currency exchange and everything. So this gentleman just sent it straight to the radio station.
Yes, he sent it straight to the radio station because all funds that have been raised in Kenya have been used in Kenya. Whenever we receive funds coming into the ministry here or into Grace Conferences in Canada, when we receive those contributions in Canada, we have always sent that amount on, even though there's a certain percentage of that is cost for wiring the funds. We've absorbed all of those costs to make sure that the amount that the people gave is the amount that arrives in Kenya. And we've done that consistently.
Where's that money come from? Your own pocket?
From the American Gospel Revolution Funds and Mike Williams Ministry, or it comes out of my own pocket at times.
You used to point up how to make yourself seem better, laugh and joke about the way some people are. But now you realize we're all in this together. Help a brother or a sister, you'll go far.
Now, Mike, we've got Jeff Robertson on the line, and he is going to bring us up to date with our pledge drive. How are things going, Jeff, and how are you, mate?
I'm doing well. You guys are doing pretty good, too, from the looks. So, we're moving along here. We've got several more people who have come to help us out during the pledge drive. I actually want to start off with a name who has been with us through thick and thin and really, really has kept the ministry alive when nobody else was able. And that's Li Lao Sung in Hong Kong.
We never hear from Li Lao, do we?
No, we haven't heard from him hardly at all since the birth of his baby.
That's a good reason.
Yeah, she was born 2 years ago. Her name's Laurel. And I think he's too busy being a doctor and a daddy. Lee is a doctor. And that keeps you really busy. He works for a hospital in Hong Kong. And on top of that, he's being a daddy. But he still supports us greatly, greatly. And we're very grateful to him. So thank you, Li Lao.
Li Lao from Hong Kong, thank you, sir.
Yeah. Then we've got Todd and Angela Gray in LaPorte City, Iowa. And they are monthly contributors and always give extra every pledge drive. They're busy, busy people raising a family. All of their children grew up on the gospel. They don't know what it's like to live in fear of anything.
Wow.
And then we've got Roy Muse. He's in Yarmouth, Nova Scotia in Canada.
I saw his house the other day.
Yeah. I went
on Google and Google Maps and looked it up. What a hot little, it's like a cottage by the sea, isn't it?
It is a cottage by the sea. It's beautiful.
Wonderful.
And of course, though, Nova Scotia got hit really bad with this last winter weather, and he had to have a new roof put on his house. I feel bad for him because roofs are expensive. Jackie Barnard, our beloved poet laureate, in Huachuca City, Arizona. He has contributed. He's also a monthly giver, but he also contributed extra to the pledge drive.
Bless you, Jackie.
We love you, Jackie. Bud and Ruth Ramsey in Park River, North Dakota. They have been, supporting Mike Williams Ministries for 20 years. Dwayne and Ruth Daku in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. They are monthlies and also gave extra for this. Suzanne Johnson, another wonderful woman in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. She's a monthly, and she gave extra for this pledge drive as well. Tom Tomsky. He's in Canton, Ohio, and he's one of the three heretics. He and two of his buddies get together every weekend and just talk about the gospel.
Well, these are guys who used to gate crash churches. Were they those guys?
No, that's the Johnson brothers, Scott Johnson and his brother David. They used to crash churches. They did more than crash churches too. They were obscene about the gospel. And then we have Mike and Joyce Camelotis in Chandler, Arizona. Lovely couple. Mike actually gets together every week with Brad Wilson, and they do their little gospel thing. I mentioned Suzanne Johnson, right?
Can I interrupt you there, bud?
Yeah, no problem. I kind of lost my place a little bit there.
That's okay. You didn't mention Sue Johnson. On the new website, we're going to be trying to put into place a mechanism whereby if you have a little group in, say, Georgia, or if you've got a little group in Calgary, or if you just want to get together with other GRs, you'll be able to set meetups, times, introduce each other to each other, invite your other friends. Because one of the things, Jeff, as you know, that we've often scratched our heads about is, how do you help people? Well, there are plenty of people out there who like fellowship. They just want to, you know, friendship with other people who think the same as they do. But how do you do that without sort of falling back into the over-organized church model? We've kind of stayed away from that. But I think it's going to be good when we see our people at least having the possibility of meeting up with other GRs. And we don't have to be there. It's just fine that they want to be with each other.
Yeah. Mike Williams, Barris Bartlett, and Jeff Robertson do not the gospel revolution make, you know. we're just here getting the word out. That's all.
Did you see you bought it the other day on our Facebook page? Someone said that you were the leader of the pack. So you got it, mate. You're the leader of the pack on Facebook.
Yeah, I'm the alpha. I'm the alpha. Okay. Thank you very much. Also goes out to Richard and Pat Salonen, another dear couple. They're in Laurium, Michigan. And they have been with the ministry for over 20 years also. Michael Price, wonderful man in Scarborough, Maine. Love talking to him. Love talking to all these people. Lee Dick, she is in Kelowna, British Columbia. And Lee's been around for about 20 years too. Al Vitale. Al Vitale is a wonderful new addition in the past year or two to our group. And he's a really, really solid man. Great to talk to. He's a monthly giver and also gave to extra for the pledge drive. Cookie Davy Duck. Beautiful lady. She is now 1 year past her husband's passing, and she's doing really, really well. And I think the gospel has a lot to do with that. She has her moments. Bob Hines, McDonough, Georgia, author of Redemption, A Declaration for All, Not a Choice for a Few. Definitely recommend that book. That is definitely the handbook, the Bible handbook to the gospel.
You bet. I've never seen a book so well researched, so well annotated. I mean, you read one chapter of that book and you've been like to college for a year. This guy is really, really good. And yet it's simple enough for us, for me to understand it.
Yeah, it's a great reference handbook. Anybody who's been churched and raised to read the Bible a certain way and now gets the gospel but has questions, that is the go-to book.
I just can't remember his website off the top of my head. But if
the
you,
website is thetruegospel.net, and it will take you to Amazon if you or Barnes & Noble if you want an ebook, if you've got a Kindle or a Nook. Will sell it to you in hardback. It's a lot pricier, but you can get it in ebook or in hard copy, and definitely a recommended read. Between that, see, Mike's, that's a reference book and a good handbook. Mike's book is the gospel from a new way of thinking. And so the two complement each other. They go very well hand in hand, I think. And that Mike's book is one, The Gospel According to Mike, in case we have a new listener. And you can get that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble as well. Jerry Ryan, he's also been with us for a long time. He's in Tampa, Florida, and he has contributed. Thank you, Jerry. Yvonne DeClean, she's a monthly giver. And Yvonne, I wish you well, too. Yvonne recently lost her husband. It was a short-lived illness.
She's been with us for quite a while, hasn't she?
Oh, over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Rosa Walker. She's in West Monroe, Louisiana. She's been with us for a long time. James Oliver in Kelowna, British Columbia. We see James piping in now and then on Facebook. And we want to thank James. James is extremely passionate for the gospel. Then there's Betty Cochran, also a longtime supporter. She's in Atoka, Oklahoma, and wonderful lady. She's you know, one of the people who's been keeping this ministry alive and going, and she just loves the message. Wayne Jensen in Bingham Lake, Minnesota, has come through as he always does every pledge drive. And there's Cecil and Betty Lou Hagen, Gabriola in Gabriola, British Columbia. It's an island there off the coast of British Columbia.
They own an island?
No, they don't own an island. They live on it, though.
Oh, nice.
And they just ferry back and forth to the mainland on a ferry. And beautiful, beautiful part of the world there. And they have become new monthly contributors, actually.
New monthlies?
Yeah, new monthly.
Another certificate of pharisectomy to go out there.
Oh, yeah, we have a few of those, actually. Mary Kustra, she's a monthly giver, and she's upped her monthly pledge. Another and she's one? In Ellijay, Georgia. And then last but not least, we have Billy Thompson. And she's in Wachuca City, Arizona. Jackie Barnard's other half.
Frankly, I'm disappointed in them. I'm quite disappointed in them because I haven't heard one word, I haven't heard beep about them buying Mike's old car, the car that sort of sealed their romance.
Oh, I have.
They bought it.
Jackie posted, don't sell our car. And Billy said, I don't know what we'd do with another car. So...
No, I just think they're making that stuff up. I don't know about that at all.
Yeah, we love you all. We really do. Thank you. Without you, this ministry would not be possible. And we are doing everything we can to serve you guys because we know you love the message, and we're doing everything we can to get it out to as many people as we can.
Now, I don't think you said Susan Johnson, did you?
Suzanne Johnson?
Yes, sorry. There you go. No, yeah, you didn't say Susan Johnson because it's Suzanne Johnson.
Yeah, I thought I did, but Suzanne, you know I can't forget too. Suzanne is in Fitchburg, Wisconsin, and longtime supporter of the ministry. Wonderful lady, wonderful person. She's been through a lot this past year herself, but she's doing well. And she's a monthly giver, and of course she gives extra during the pledge drive too. And we love you, Suzanne. Thank you so much.
Now, Jeff, what was the name of that gentleman from Kenya who gave, who funded 2 weeks of the gospel on the air there? What was his name?
Because now,
I want everyone in Kenya to know who this guy is because this, this guy's
actually
a hero.
If you remember, we actually recorded an extra one so we could announce his name last week.
I know, but I wanted to go out again. I want everyone in Kenya to know that there's a person over there. In fact, I want everyone in America, North America, to know that there's a guy over there who's out doing them.
His name is Justin Kiprotich, and he is from Kericho, or Kericho. It's a town near Nakuru. And he has come up with enough money to air the radio show 4 times in Kenya, two per week for 2 weeks. And that's an amazing amount. We are definitely grateful for that because that radio show really has had a huge impact in East Africa. So thank you, Justin. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Justin gave the funds that would enable us to get contacted by, including a whole number of other people, 7 pastors, I think he said. I mean, that's really the payoff. The payoff is the fact that there are pastors in Kenya, and I don't know, they may have come from other countries around there who heard the broadcast, but there are 7 pastors at least who've been in touch with us to want to know more about this gospel of grace and peace. I mean, that is heroic in my book.
Oh, yeah. You know what? This is going to be news for you guys, actually. I haven't forwarded you the email yet. We had a pastor in Croatia contact us a couple months ago, and he had a few questions about the gospel because he was starting to come to the conclusion that Jesus redeemed everybody. He asked us a few questions, and I responded to his email rather quickly, and he replied back, thank you for the quick reply. And I answered some of the outstanding questions he still had. And now he's totally convinced that Jesus did redeem the world. And he just emailed us yesterday and reminded me of that. And I remember the man. And now he's wanting to start a library, and he's asked us for a copy of our book to be donated to it. And he's already talking about the fact that he knows that the Christian community will not accept this message. So he's venturing out in however he can.
Wow. So, we might be able to give him more than just a book, eh?
We'll give him more than just a book.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That is fantastic. And that family, see, if ever you want to know where your money is going, Jeff and I are looking at each other right now, and we're both we both know no one's getting rich out of this. Where your money is going is into stories just like that. It's people who are getting in touch with us, and sometimes we don't get to share it all with you. We wish we could. We just aren't set up for that at the moment. But Jeff, that's a story that isn't it amazing? Pastors are the ones that Mike's message, or the message of the gospel of grace and peace, seems most to attract. Pastors.
Oh, yeah. There are pastors out there who they're starting to doubt everything that they themselves are saying from the pulpit. And they're finding themselves actually having to preach a message that they are no longer believing. And some people, one pastor wrote us about 2 years ago, he said something to the effect, I wonder how my congregation, if they would still accept me if they knew what I really believe.
Wow. Yeah. Because the first thing that gets hit is your pocket.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we have another pastor in New Jersey who's still a pastor, and he has really terrible health problems. And he's the only thing he knows how to do is be a pastor. He's been a pastor all his life. And he shares what little he can about grace, but he cannot share the gospel that he truly believes. But he knows he'd be out of a job and out of insurance and everything else if he were to tell them what he really believes. So he's limited to what grace they will accept.
Yeah. Wow. Jeff, thanks so much, mate. And we're going to hear from you again next week, I guess. And good luck with the pledge calls.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye, mate.
Bye.
Well, Michael, we have some good people in the Gospel Revolution, don't we?
Yes, we do. And I think we are about a sixth of the way to our goals, if my math is working right here. What we need during the month of January is approximately $1,000 a day to come in. We had the conference there. People did contribute the best that they could. We'll also are going to be including the funds that come in Calgary into this pledge drive. Thank you guys so very much. All of you that were on Jeffrey's list this week, goodness gracious, we extend our gratefulness to you as you've extended your gratefulness to us for what we do. And I know that that's why you do what you do, is that you are grateful that this gospel is going out. It is making a powerful impact, folks. The arrangement of the way and the rearranging of the way people think about themselves and others is going to change this planet.
How well we can keep this gospel going out to all the corners of the earth is entirely dependent on the donations we receive.
Mm-hmm. This is very true.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family.
When you're feeling down or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Gospel Revolution.
Now, Mike, you mentioned Dallas. Tell us about Dallas. Fill us in, mate.
Well, a wonderful trip. Number one, thanks to James Forehand and Greg Savoy for taking the lead in making this all come together. So thanks to both of you guys. The connections were just uncanny. I mean, the spectrum was across the board. We had one gentleman there who started listening 6 weeks ago and was really desperate to find some answers, was going through family illness and was just really, really desperate. And just 6 weeks ago began to listen in his search on the internet. Again, that's why all of this is so vitally important. I mean, if you heard this man's story, you would know that if all of the funds that everyone contributed only reached this one gentleman, I know everybody out there would have still contributed just to see this happen. The transformation that and this gentleman, I mean, he was so touched. His heart was so touched by what was happening in Kenya. Also, we had three pastors that I know of. Other people, I think, also in the ministry in some degree in attendance there. Brand new people who had just started listening just within the last few weeks. People who had encountered my teaching over the last 30 years, off and on. So it was a real collection of folks. One group that has been meeting for some time, I spoke for them on Sunday two times. We met in James Forehand's home on Saturday evening. We met there from the time I got on the ground and over to James's house at just after 2 until everybody left sometime around 9:30. So that meeting lasted from 2 o'clock in the afternoon until about 9:30 that night. We went into a lot of stuff. Most of it was questions and answers and questions and discussion. And a lot of it was me asking them questions. You know, it's like, well, what do you think about this? It really was quite amazing. One of the pastors, he is a former Assembly of God pastor who is now a pastor with Unity. His insights were really wonderful. The pastors that were present were Pastor Joseph, Pastor Luke, and Pastor Mike. These guys were so sweet and so wonderful. They contributed a great deal. I learned from them while I was there. One of the issues that came up was the issue of ultimate reconciliation. Now, the first time I came in contact with this was up in Canada, and I think there was about 12 of them who professed that they were ultimate reconciliationists, and that is that they believed that ultimately that everyone would make it to heaven. That was their persuasion.
Universal reconciliation. Does that mean everything? I mean, like everything, every flower, every dog, every Satan is going to be reconciled?
Within this ultimate reconciliation, there are those that include man. There's those that include Satan. They include right down, as you would say, dogs and flowers and trees.
Oh, so ultimate reconciliation is like an umbrella term. It's not a single group.
No, it's not a single belief system. It is a single group that believes that reconciliation, as spoken of in the Bible, is something that has yet or was yet to be accomplished after the cross.
Okay.
Within that is a persuasion of preterism, which teaches that the fullness of the scriptures to bring redemption to the world was fulfilled in 70 AD.
What do they hinge that on? Because it occurs to me that's the year, wasn't it, that was it Commander Titus from the Roman mm-hmm. army went in and desecrated the temple and pretty much demolished Jerusalem.
Yes, which would have been some 30-something years after the crucifixion. One of the issues, of course, is the teachings of Jesus, especially Matthew chapter 24. Jesus foretold the destruction of the temple. So this question came up, and they were wondering why that ultimate reconciliation is, or I'm sorry, that preterist would be wrong for thinking that this was a part of the fulfillment of Scripture. When the question came up and the quote was given from Jesus about the destruction of the temple, which we go into in Matthew 24 in great detail in the teachings, but we pointed out that you could tell that this was a moment that was critical, and it was a slight moment of being taken aback, but they sailed right through it very easily, actually, when I pointed out the fact that even the prophecies that Jesus gave were not prophecies of the scriptures. Jesus spoke of the prophecies of the scriptures, clearly delineating anything that he might have prophesied or anyone would have prophesied. The guy saying that if Paul went into Jerusalem, these cuffs that he had on his hands, that this is what they're going to do to you. They're going this if you go back. He was kind of prophesying to Paul. But see, that's not a prophecy of the scriptures. The scriptures being the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, and the prophecies were about Christ.
So hang on. Jesus said that the law, the Psalms, and the prophets all spoke of him, yes?
That is correct.
So from that, you are deducing that all the prophecies of the scriptures, being the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, were about Christ and therefore could not have been about, say, the Black Plague or about America or about 9/11 or about Paul going to Rome.
That would be true. And you see, if Jesus had prophesied about 9/11, which he could have, that certainly would not have had anything to do with the redemptive work of the cross.
Hold on. The redemptive work of the cross for you is the redemption of the world, yes?
Correct.
And AD 70 seems to be a very important date for preterists. But
yes,
if Jesus was in Matthew 24 prophesying about AD 70, it had nothing to do with redemption.
Nothing to do with redemption at all. There's no redemptive power in the destruction of the physical temple. The redemptive power was in the destruction of the temple Christ. Because, you know, even when Jesus said, destroy this temple and I'll raise it back up in 3 days. Well, you know, it took hundreds of years for our forefathers to build this temple. And you say destroy it and you'll raise it back up again in 3 days. And of course, in the commentary on this, in those writings, it says that, of course, Jesus was not speaking of the physical temple, but his body itself. So you see, the temple was built as a type and shadow of Christ himself. All what's became a who, and all of the things that Christianity hangs on to that they still do not see Christ in are the things that were a what that still remain a what even on this side of the cross. When Christ was manifested,
say that again.
All of the things that Christianity is obsessed with and actually lead people away from the gospel with are the things that were a what before the cross. They're still a what.
Okay, can you remember where you are right now?
Mm-hmm.
Love lifts us up where we belong, where the eagles cry on a mountain high. Love lifts us up where we belong, up from the wild.
Are you saying that all the things that were a what? So the brazen laver in the outer court, that was a what, and that became a who in Jesus? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it became a who in Christ.
Well, extra on the bottom of the priest's garment was always a bell and a pomegranate, a bell and a pomegranate, a bell and a pomegranate, until you got all the way around the garment. That was about Christ?
That was Christ. That's all Christ.
The blue and the white in the priest's garment, that was about Christ?
That's all Christ.
What about the here's one, mate. What about the Indiana Jones thing? What about the, what was it on the top?
Ark of the Covenant.
Ark of the Covenant.
The Ark of the Covenant, that was a what that became a who. He is the Ark of the Covenant.
Well, what about the Holy of Holies? You know,
he is the Holy of Holies. What about the sacrifice? He is the sacrifice. What about the priesthood? He is the great high priest. All what's became a who. Now, when that transition, when we realize that transition, Barris, that stops everything at the cross as far as interpretation of Scripture is concerned.
Hold on now. I know what brought me to that point, and that was Solomon rebuilt the temple, and this is a temple that was there in Jesus' day, yes? Matthew 24 mm-hmm. they're talking about. Okay. And so you're saying that that temple, with all of the picturesque types that were used in that temple, because when you go through it, the stuff that he put in that temple was incredible. That was all about Christ.
All about Christ. Every law that was written was about Christ. Whether I can understand it at this point or not, now we can see many of the laws and many of the types and shadows, but just because we can't understand them all doesn't mean I have the right to take them out of the context that Jesus said all of this was about him, that the scriptures, the law, the psalm, and the prophets were about him. He said, in them you think you have eternal life, but these are they that speak of me. So all of this was about Christ. So when all of these what's manifested in the body of Christ, that's where we look to see the definition of the fulfillment of Scripture, the fulfillment of law, the fulfillment of Psalms, the fulfillment of all of these things, because it's all about Christ. You see, preterism and ultimate reconciliation, when you get down to the bottom of it, really is no better than Christianity in as far as it does despite and insults the grace of God.
How?
Because it takes away the manifestation of the fulfillment of all things in Christ and places it on a historical event and upon a thing and upon a what rather than upon a who.
How does it do that?
By taking from the cross being the fullness of redemption and delaying it to some other time.
Okay, so when Jesus said it is finished.
He meant it, yeah. And since all we know, you say, well, what was finished? Well, he said all of the law, the Psalms, and the prophets were about him. So what was finished? The law, the Psalms, and the prophets were finished. They were completely fulfilled. Any delaying of this only places humanity in that space to where that there's uncertainty about relationship with God, what God thinks of us, position as to whether he's outside, inside. You know, in Christianity, we're constantly trying to close that gap between God and man through prayer, praise, effort, giving, tithing, upping, whatever we can do. But in Christ, you see, the total fulfillment of all is that Christ and mankind have become one. God and man have become one. To take it past that point of death, burial, and resurrection, the resurrection, the death to all that was preceded, and the resurrection of all that was to come as far as God and man is concerned. This is the fullness of time. This is the place that was spoken of by the prophets, that all things would be fulfilled, not part things, not some things, not most things, not 99 9/10% of things. That's why that in Christianity they can so flagrantly go into the book of Daniel and take it completely out of context and say that somehow there was a hold put on Daniel's prophecy at the cross, and it's been on hold for 2,000 years because we see that it brings us right up to the Messiah. But, oh, my goodness, we don't see sin done away with. We don't see everlasting righteousness brought in. So they are actually delaying still yet even the prophecies, which simply is doing despite to the spirit of grace. This is an insult to the grace of God and to the work of the cross to take these things out of context.
But what about the 1,000 years of, you know, they'll beat their plowshares into swords? Oh, no, the other way around. Right, that's it. And the lamb's going to lie down with the lion, although the lamb won't get much sleep. And everyone's going to be, oh, yeah, and there's going to be a red heifer, isn't there? And that's going to be in Jerusalem. And aren't we going to kill the red heifer? Isn't everyone going to go to Jerusalem at least once a year? Apparently the Messiah is going to sit on the throne of David in Jerusalem. I hope they dig it up and make it clean. I mean, that's a big part of Christianity, isn't it? Yeah, 1,000-year reign of Christ.
It is. And we have traded the 1,000-year reign of Christ for the reign of Christ eternally. So, Christianity is settling for something that was only a type and shadow of the reign of Christ forever. And the fact of it is that even this temporary reign, in the fullness of time, in the fullness of the scriptures, Christ has become all of these things.
Now, you're back to the what and the who thing. I know what you're doing here. You're trying to trick me. but, I mean, if there's no 1,000 years of peace in the future, and what are we going through all this syrup for? What are we walking through this molasses? I mean, like, surely we've got to have something to look forward to, don't we?
Well, I think history says we've got a whole lot to look forward to. Look where we are as opposed to where we were. goodness, who would have known? But, you know, Christianity gave us no hope of living in a world where that 2 out of 3 diagnoses of cancer would be cured. Christianity gave us no hope that we would live in a technological age to where that we could communicate with each other simultaneously around the planet. Christianity gave us no hope that we would be poised to be able to address hunger around the planet in a way that we've never done before. Christianity gave us none of these hopes whatsoever, because in Christianity we've always lived with a terminal planet. But every point that the planet has not terminated when Christianity said it was going to, we've gotten better at this. That's what we've got to look forward to.
But that'd be just human pride, surely, wouldn't it?
That's what it could turn into without the gospel. That's why we're out there sharing, because not only could it just turn into human pride, but also, I think, greatly limited to human ability without knowing this incredible union between God and man that took place 2,000 years ago. And and people would say, well, why try to disprove the preterism, the 70 AD theory? Because it's wrong. There's nothing redemptive. There's nothing scripturally fulfilling about the issue of 70 AD. Now, the other thing that ultimate reconciliation.
Listen, with this, can you hold that thought for a moment?
Sure.
With preterism, are they what preterists are doing is just arguing about when it happened. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, this is true.
Why is that important?
Well, it's important because they're attributing the destruction of a physical temple to being the fulfillment of scriptures. That is taking away from the work of the cross, because Jesus said it is finished there. He didn't say it will be finished in a few years when the armies come in and destroy the physical temple. Jesus was saying it was going to be over when his physical temple was his temple, being his body, was destroyed and raised from the dead in 3 days. So it made it irrelevant. Yes, it was a prophecy of Jesus. But whether it had been destroyed or not was completely irrelevant in the scheme of the work of the cross and the human race becoming one. We did not delay till 70 AD for the human race and the work of the cross to become effective until 70 AD, or to have that was not where the law was done away with. That's, again, another thing that preterists deal with, is that is the point where that the law was dealt with, was 70 AD.
Now, that's 70 AD. Now it's 2014. What's it matter to us?
Well, it matters a whole lot. We need to understand the power of God. If the gospel is the power of God, then the power of God is – it can do something. And people would, of course, want to ask, well, what does the power of God do? I don't know that I know, but I know that I don't want to be without it, whatever it is.
Well, one thing it does is salvation.
It renews the mind, saves the soul.
The gospel is the power of God unto salvation.
Yes.
It's the power of God to have us think in terms of us being one with God.
In anything that takes away from that, let me tell you, if anybody's going to doubt, it's just like when we always talk about sin and judgment. You see, if I don't see those around me as righteous and holy, the one that I'm going to doubt the most that is righteous and holy is going to be me. Although I've got to cover that up to be able to judge others. And it is the only way I can prove I'm righteous and holy is the fact that I do judge other people.
Well, you're not, actually. I've got bad news for you. I am, but you're not.
And thank God
thank God at least one of us is, eh?
No, thank God this horse doesn't have to be rode anymore.
Okay, do you remember where you were when I asked you if you could remember the thought?
Yes.
Okay.
Another point that ultimate reconciliation teaching takes away from the total effect of the work of the cross is that the reason it has to be ultimate or eventual, and even though they do include everybody, is that there has to be this dealing with the impurities that there are in man to get us all cleaned up and ready for this ultimate reconciliation.
So the problem with ultimate reconciliation is that it's ultimate.
That's the ultimate problem with it, yes. Is that it in and of itself is that it is ultimate. And the gospel is finished. This is a finished work of the cross. There's nothing ultimate. I just find it almost nauseating to think that someone would think that the process of this life or a hell or a purgatory is going to a refining fire greater than that of the cross is going to prepare the human race for God to be united to them. So what we have is this period of time here on earth with a human race that is not in union with God.
Because Calvary was insufficient.
because Calvary was completely insufficient, which they cannot get around the fact that that is what they teach. They teach an insufficient Christ.
So when Jesus said it is finished, he really should have been more specific.
Well, I don't think he had to be. I think in the context of when he said it.
But if I'm going to follow ultimate reconciliation, I've got to presume that Jesus kind of used a bit of Hebrew shorthand and instead of, I mean, he could have at least said, hey, listen, this is the end of part one.
Well, for ultimate reconciliationists, that would be true. I think Jesus was very clear that it was finished, but by their definition, he didn't mean what he said.
Now, like, you know, you can see Rocky 1, Rocky 2, right up to Rocky 53. Christianity teaches us that you've got Salvation 1, Salvation 2, Salvation, and Lord knows how many different salvations, because every time I confess my sin, I'm forgiven, so there's another salvation of a kind there.
Correct.
And really, ultimate reconciliation, you're saying, is quite similar.
It's self-righteousness.
But it's Salvation 1, then Salvation 2.
Yes.
Who knows how many down the road.
Any salvation other than just one, any redemption other than one redemption, any redemption that is not for all is self-righteousness.
Hello, this is Adventist Chicks from Nakuru, Kenya, and I have a spoken word poem. And God said, let us make man, not in our own image and likeness, but a man who is one with us. Let him be righteous, holy, and complete, for we are one with him. We will no longer be called a trinity by the religious community, for we are all one. All men are included in this one man, and no man is excluded, regardless of faith, belief, greed, or religion. All of this was consummated on the day of the Lord. The cross was the day of the Lord. On this day was the fulfillment of the law of the Psalms and the prophet, and the end of the world was at hand. The 10th week of Daniel was also fulfilled. The new world of the new creation was birthed on this day of the Lord. Well, what are you waiting for? Waiting for the end of the world, for the judgment of the world, for the second coming of the Messiah, for the fulfillment of the prophecy, for the destruction of the wicked, for the number 666 and the beast to be revealed? Well, I have shocking news for you. It all happened at the cross, on the day of the Lord. There's no more spiritual warfare, no more prayers and fasting and intercessions, no more tithing, sowing and reaping, no more seeking the Lord, no more knocking on doors to be opened, no more obedient needed, no more curses for disobedient, no more calling for the name of the Lord, no more hell to punish sinners and sins, and finally, there's no more confession of sin. And do you know why? Do you know why? It is because there's no more law. Once again, my name is Agnesa Sheets from Nakuru, Kenya. Be blessed.
And so it is that we must leave you, folks. We love you one and all, and we especially thank those who, with your financial support, keep this message of grace and peace going out every single week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey. If you'd like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone me on 234-564-0971. That's area code 234-564-0971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. And so, it's good night from myself, Barris Bartlett, from the Gospel Revolution Studios in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it is good night from Michael Williams right here in beautiful Houston, Texas. I swear, I don't know why everybody doesn't live here.
Because some of us prefer to live in Dallas. Nashville.
Oh, well.
Calgary.
I guess that's a choice of whether or not you want salvation or not, right?
No, it's a choice of where you want to spend paradise, like in Australia.
Oh, now, boy, you could almost convince me there, Bruce.
So remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
We're going to really try to do it better.
Is what we call silence.
And that's all I got to say about that.
You happy, mate?
I am. Think you got a show out of that?
I got an hour and 59 minutes of stuff that we can do something out of. Yeah, I reckon I got a show out of that. I've just got a lot of stuff I'm trying to... Yeah, there it is.
Gospel Revolution.